Field Guide. When you arrive, it must be morning. The light must blue over triangles of tree line. There must be fields of corn, and there must be coroners mistaking elbow joint for knee bone. There must be a trail, and there must be the skull of a possum still lodged inside the trunk of a tree. There must be a tree. There must be the slightest hint of danger. There must be corners neatly tucked. There must be red the color of a puppy's tongue. There must be pleasure strapped or stolen. And there must be ice. There must always, 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 always be ice. There must be a way to feel our way toward the water and light from darkness. There must be a fire. There must be a little candle thing that makes the bells go round. There must be a girl. There has always been a girl. There must be a boy. There has always been a boy. There has never been a man, but there must now be a man, not because one is needed, but because one isn't. There must be a ghost. They must be hungry. There must be pine needles, paper cuts, a punchline, a burial. There must be a way to fall asleep beside the dead coyote and not wake up wearing its fur. There must be a horseman. There must be someone around here who remembers the voice of the girl. It isn't me, but it must be me. There must be daylight. There must be a yellow house. There must be a window, a ladder, a compass. We must have new names. There must be a boy and a girl, and we must have new names. There must be a boy and there must be a girl. There must be, there must be. There must be someone looking for us by now. They must wonder where we are.
Oliver, is that a poem from your new collection, Advantages of Being Evergreen?
It is. It is actually the very first poem that begins the book.
As we speak, the book doesn't quite exist yet, but tell us when it will and the where, what, when of the book.
That's right. It is on its way into the world. My second collection, Advantages of Being Evergreen, which will be the official publication date, is September 15th, 2019. So I'm very excited and working through page proofs and cover designs and all of that stuff with my press, Cleveland State University Poetry Center.
And right now you're working at Kalamazoo College, right? Assistant professor of poetry, is that right?
That's right. I started teaching at Kalamazoo College in the fall, just this last fall, and I'm teaching creative writing and poetry, which is basically a dream job to me. So having a lot of fun with the students.
When you teach, there are so many, big and small, old and young, who are intimidated by poetry. Do you find that in your students over at Kay? And if you do, how do you get them over that, get them comfortable with poetry?
I do. I always get so excited when students find their way to my classes, because so often I hear, you know, I was kind of scared to take this class, or I had a bad experience learning poetry in high school, or, you know, anything like that. So I get very excited that they you know, have signed up for more and that I get to work with them. And for me, also, my interest and desire and love for poetry is sort of the equal and opposite shape of my fear of poetry.
There you go.
So I share with my students about my own writing process, and that the fear of poetry in some ways is never goes away, but is sort of part of the bug that poets catch that keeps us coming back to the page and hoping that the next poem we write will be, you know, the one that says it all perfectly. And of course it never is, which means we get to keep writing poems.
You probably have some techniques. I've read a little bit about your workshops that you do on how you get people to open up. Maybe talk about that. And do you do those type of techniques for yourself as well?
I do. Yeah. I've been lucky to have some great teachers in my life, from working with Linda Berry closely at Wisconsin, who was a big influence on me for these creative practices and getting words down on the page. And one practice that I find reliable when I remember to show up for it is drafting by hand. And filling shelves throughout my life with expensive, journals, Moleskine notebooks that only have a few pages in them. I've switched completely to composition notebooks because you can find them for about 99 cents. And so there's not a fear that you will, wreck the notebook with your half-formed first draft. So all of my students get composition notebooks on the first day, and I guide them through, various ways of just filling the pages. And another part of my creative practice that I also share with my students is just reading widely, reading as widely as possible, reading not only poems that seem aligned with your taste, but also reading against your taste, and just sort of opening up the sense of what is possible there, and trying to, approach poetry as play, which is also hard work and experiment and kind of lab space, to just see what happens and be okay with failure.
That's the hard one. I think we all have that fear, whether it's poetry or something else, the freedom to fail.
Right.
Do you use music as well as a prompt or as a relaxant?
I use music quite a bit in my own writing. My book that is coming out in September, my joke is that the variety of music that I listened to when I was writing it spanned from the Stevie Nicks station on Spotify to the Fleetwood Mac station on Spotify, which of course is really no variety at all. But, once you sort of tune into the channel, it's like whatever will keep that going to write the poems. So I bring audio in different ways in the classroom, sometimes music, sometimes audio of poets reading their work. Like we read Gwendolyn Brooks's We Real Cool on the page, and then I play audio of her playing that. And so, yeah, the ear is an important collaborator.
I have to wonder, too, though, as you listen to music, music, of course, has a beat, has a rhythm, and so does poetry. Do you find that if you play a certain type of music, that the beat of your poetry kind of matches?
That is an interesting question. I'm sure it does. I haven't thought of it as specifically as the beat, but I was sure that the mood or the feeling matches, probably. How could it not, right?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. You probably have to go back and make a note of what you're listening to when you work on the poem and see if it matches.
Right, totally.
So talk a little bit more about that new collection, Advantages of Being Evergreen, and that title. What is the advantage of being evergreen?
I wrote that book sort of in the aftermath of the 2016 election. And I was living in D.C. at the time, but right after that election, I went and spent a month at Vermont Studio Center. Mm. And, it was November going into December, and the river was freezing, and everything was sort of turning that gray, brown, white that happens in winter, except evergreen trees. So I started it there, and I was thinking just about, what sort of is beyond, what possibilities exist beyond mere survival, how even amid fear and possibilities of danger to, live and create even moments of joy and mutual support and queer kinship and just things like that. So I continued after my month at Vermont Studio Center, I put all of my things in storage and drove around the country towing a teardrop camper because I wanted to be in these, it's a beautiful country.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I wanted to be in landscapes that I felt like otherwise I might start to fear, red states and blue states. Uh-huh. And I had this idea of following rivers, which sort of became for me I had been watching, the river outside my studio window freeze over, and was kind of just starting to think about rivers as this fluid motion that defies human made, borders and boundaries. So zigzagging across the country, I didn't actually end up following rivers. I mean, rivers are everywhere. So it was sort of,
Almost impossible not to. Yeah.
Exactly. So, Yeah. And then I finished the manuscript. Then after that year of being in transit, when I had a fellowship year at University of Wisconsin-Madison.
That sounds like a wonderful journey. Does this poetry collection reflect that year, or is it just something that you did after that year of traveling?
Some of the poems do, you know, directly reference different places that I traveled and experiences that I had, you know, across the country. And others are less explicitly tied to those travels, but were absolutely filtered through them.
Are you a photographer at all? Did you collect photos from the travels?
I am an amateur photographer, and I took many cell phone pictures and was posting to Instagram a lot.
I'd have to get on your Instagram account. I think everybody should do that once in their lifetime. Just hit the road. Long road trip.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
What did you learn about the country overall, besides that it's beautiful?
It's really big.
Yes.
That really becomes clear when you spend one night in Montana and you drive all the way across it, and then you spend the next night still in Montana.
There you go. Or driving across the Dakotas when you're driving across this table of land and you just go, 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 and there's no landmarks along the way. That goes forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you have a favorite state?
Waking up in the Badlands during sunrise was beautiful, just gorgeous. I also spent a great few days just camped in the parking lot of the Bloomington Community Orchard in Bloomington, Indiana, where the poet Ross Gay, he's on the board there. And that's how I found out about the place. And it's right next to some trails, and it was early spring, and so things were kind of just starting to, you know, thaw and wake up and bloom. And that was just a fun place to be. The teardrop is a good conversation starter. You know, people either have wanted to do something similar or have done something similar. Part of what I learned also was just in that particular moment, as a queer and trans person, I think I was sort of fearful of being in certain places. Why are they staring at me, or what are they, you know, what is this person approaching me for? And really, they just wanted to talk about this teardrop. And so that was kind of an interesting moment of encountering like my own ideas about safety and danger, and realizing that for the most part, other people are just also trying to live their lives and are also just curious, and which is partly why I wanted to do the trip in the first place, to kind of recalibrate and not become so fearful of certain places. So
did you find that you're more trusting or less so after this? Sounds like maybe a little more.
I would say yes. Yeah, I would say yes, because, you know, driving across the country, there are various things that just car mechanical things that come up, or you need directions. And I definitely came away with a sense that there was help and support for that when I needed that. And that was, you know, I think a pretty powerful takeaway that has stayed with me in some ways, you know?
My trip was longer ago, but that's what I found out, that, you know, there are different kind of fears, I suppose, as a woman traveling the country alone. But I found that most people are very good. My car would break down. I'd be invited for breakfast in somebody's farmhouse, or people would give me rides. And I found that most people are really good people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to poetry. But I think I saw something on your website also that you'd been to the White House in 2016. What was that about?
Yeah, that's right. It was the, well, then annual. It hasn't happened since then, but the Trans Community Briefing, which is a big convening of different activists and artists and, you know, transgender people just working in a variety of fields, coming together to share work. And, oh, what was her name? The biggest surprise was that Loretta Lynch made an appearance and just greeted and welcomed us all. And, you know, and that was pretty amazing. Yeah, pretty intense security to be in there.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
But
Well, we touched on Instagram here for a moment. You're also on Twitter and you have a website and you're probably on Facebook. I didn't check on that. But how important is it for today's artist, writer, to be on social media, to have a presence? Has it had an effect at all on your career?
I wonder about this a lot. And the truth is, I don't really know, because I know successful writers who have nothing to do with social media and have a very little web presence, and yet their work gets shared and taught and, you know, circulated, and they're doing fine and doing well. And also, I know that there, for me, there have been, you know, just varieties of connections possible through being plugged in that way. And I think particularly, you know, for writers who maybe have different personal obligations or live, you know, geographically in regions where they might feel more isolated or not as able to plug in physical reality as much, that all of those tools can be a great way to sort of stay connected. I go back and forth on it. I mean, it's easy for me to feel like I'm waste an hour of time on Facebook without even realizing it. So I have a tool that I set up. It's a little app called Self Control. And when I hit start, it will just block me from websites that I have set up for a given amount of time. Dive in and focus. But I don't, yeah, social media and the web, I don't think it's all good or all bad. I am interested in, you know, it. For me, it doesn't replace things that are possible in physical reality. But, you know, it's a helpful part of the mix.
I have to agree, that self-control thing is interesting. I've gotten to the point where I log into Facebook once a week for maybe an hour, and that's it, and I don't miss it at all. But I am on different social media sites, and yeah, I go back and forth. I think it's like a lot of things, like TV, pros and cons, good or bad, depends on how you use it.
Right, exactly.
Well, you have an event coming up with Andy Mozina, also from K College, and Deborah Gang, a writer with her first novel out at present. Tell us about that event. What can we expect?
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. It will be at the you know, the Central Library, and the theme that Deborah has wrangled us around is good people, bad luck. I was jotting down the title of it a couple days ago, and I realized that I had accidentally jotted down bad people, good luck, which would be a very different reading, I think. Or maybe more similar than I think. I don't know. We will each be reading, you know, new or new-ish work that falls under this theme of human nature and luck. And so that's been fun to consider what I will read for that. And I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we are too.
I'm excited to be in Kalamazoo, and it's a great time for poetry. You know, there was a study that came out recently that was like that the readership for poetry is at an all-time high or something like that, which I think is pretty amazing, because every so often, you know, you'll hear a rumble about the relevance of poetry, or is poetry dead? And that's clearly not the case.
That's good to hear. And it doesn't surprise me. I think at a time when there's more unrest, as there is right now, for one reason or another, that you're going to find that people are looking for ways to communicate, and art is usually how they do that.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much, Oliver, for talking with us. And we're looking forward to both your reading and Advantages of Being Evergreen.
Thank you so much for having me on. Pleasure.